Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, firstly, what's your own writing process, and do you have more of a kind of fiercely independent approach, or have you had experience with self-publishing or going the kind of mainstream route?
Yeah, so my business, basically for the last 12 years, I've been running a self-publishing company. So my company, bookmarketing.pro, that's the current name I run under. It offers self-publishing services to authors who want to, or small presses who want to self-publish their books. So everything that I've done, it is essentially self-publish or published through my company. When I wrote my first book back in 2004, the industry was very different. And I went through this incredibly painful process of trying to get my book published and then trying to find a distributor. And it was incredibly difficult, a huge, huge learning curve. And that's what prompted me to start this company, to help other people so they didn't have to go through all this. So my first book I wrote was Year to Success, and it was about 740 pages, really thick book. And the whole concept of it was 365 days, essentially, of self-improvement ideas. So you read one section a day, and the whole concept of like success that I put forward in that book is, it's not like an overnight thing. It's not just a couple things, do this, this, and this, the 7 steps, the 6 keys. It doesn't work that way. It's about small incremental improvements that compound over time. And then it puts you in a much better position to succeed at virtually anything you do. So that was the pitch. And the publishers all rejected it because they said, readers don't want to wait a year. They want something now. How about we change the title to like the 7 keys of success? And I said, no, you know, that's a completely different book. And the market's flooded with crap like that's like pointless. So that's when I decided to distribute it myself. And back at the time, in order to get all this done, save you all the harsh details, but essentially I paid $30,000 for a garage full of books, and also storing at a warehouse where I had to pay like $1,000 a month storage fee. And I ended up taking a bath, even though the books sold fairly well, the amount that I had to put out and the books that I had to buy, I ended up losing money on the whole process. And that's when the whole self-publishing print-on-demand thing started coming around, and that changed everything. That gave like any author the opportunity with very little money to put out a book and make it available to the entire world. So, and that's where the industry is today. And that's really exciting. But even more than that, like now what we're doing stuff with AI, artificial intelligence, where an author or a potential author can just come to our site with an idea Like I have an idea for a nonfiction book, and within a few hours, they could have the entire book written, created, the covers published, everything, like an audiobook format, print book, and ebook. So it's a really exciting time in the publishing industry.
Yeah, that's crazy. I had a similar experience, actually. I went through a very painful self-publishing process. It was so reaffirming because I actually crowdfunded it initially to get it going. And right. then I had awesome support through that. And then agonized over the book for a couple of years, went through the self-publishing process, and then it just literally sunk to the bottom of the Amazon ocean, and I didn't know how to threw money on different marketing things that didn't work, and then I was facing the kind of questions from distant family members about how many copies have you sold and all that. But actually, it wasn't, in honesty, it wasn't really a money-making exercise. It was a very important, it was all just a huge learning curve for me and part of the writing process, and just to finish it and go through that whole process. And like you, I just learned, I mean, yours was obviously before then. I experienced it with bands, you know, getting 500 CDs printed and then you find them on the roof, you're still finding them on the roof and in the cellar and stuff. So you had a garage full of prints. I mean, now with the print on demand, obviously it's a huge game changer, and the influence of AI, as you say. But I do consider myself fiercely independent now artistically, but I'm sort of torn now from what I learned in the self-publishing process, and I'm weighing up the best kind of avenues moving forward.
Yeah, well, I could definitely give you some maybe encouraging information, or it might maybe discouraging, who knows. But to give you an example, like I consider myself like incredibly entwined in the self-publishing industry. Again, been doing this daily, all day, every day for like 12 years. I've written over a dozen books myself, the old fashioned way, not with AI, hundreds with AI. And the books that I've written, I've got two that do extremely well. And then like a few that do okay, you know, I'll make probably like a few dozen sales a year. So, you know, it's not bad. And then like some that I'll be happy with a couple sales a year. Mm. So that's me. That's somebody who has like incredible knowledge of the industry. I think I know what people want, but it's not all about that. Like you say, like the majority of those books that I've written weren't about like making money. They were about, I've got these ideas that I really want to share and get out there. One is even like my personal memoirs, which is really for me and my family. So the fact that that doesn't sell, that's perfectly fine with me. So you have to go into the whole process with that mindset, say, all right, am I doing this like strictly to make money, or do I have like some ideas that I really want to get out there? And then you could do both. You could say, okay, I got these ideas, I really want to get out there. How could I do that while also making a lot of money? But then you have to like change the content a little bit to make it very marketable. Like look at the audience, maybe change the title. So there's a lot to that strategy. But the important thing is, like you're not going to hit a home run, and authors need to know this, like on your first try. It's I'm not going to say you're not never going to do it, but it's your chances are not very good for that. The second thing that I would tell people, self-published authors, when it comes to marketing, I mean, there's so much crap out there, and that is basically my job. Like at bookmarketing.pro, what I do is I go through dozens, even over 100 of different book marketing promotions that are commonly offered on the internet by different companies. Like they have to meet like a certain level of respect, like the credibility for me to even try them, because there's so many crappy things that come and go like constantly. And then I try them all, not just with one title, but with several different titles, with several different genres and different circumstances. And I see what works. So our services are kind of a collection of all the things that kind of pass that test. like, okay, for enough people, this works and this has results. So there's a lot of stuff out there that's kind of crap and doesn't work. And then also one thing I've learned over the years is the effective marketing. And this is the part that's kind of a tough pill to swallow. And it may sound like I have ulterior motive here, but really to market a book successfully, it's not just a one and done type of deal. You have to do a continual type of marketing that slowly builds up organic growth, because that's the key, right? You don't want to keep putting money into your book. You want to put some money in your book, and then you want it to catch on, and you want readers to share with other readers, and you want it to grow that way. And then the Amazon ranks grow and your other ranks on the different sites grow, and your book gets more visible in the search engines and the different sites where, like, when you're searching at Amazon or searching at Kobo or whatever, and then more people will buy it, and you'll get more money and you'll make more. That's the ultimate goal. And really the only way to do that is to just keep on marketing on a regular basis until it actually catches on. And then, here's the big but here, not every book is destined for this kind of organic growth. I mean, let's face it, there are a lot of books out there that are either just not any good, or they may be very good books, like very good writing, but they're just not very marketable. They don't have a good enough audience. Like, it doesn't have to be a huge audience. It could be a small niche, but it's not enough for the niche. It's not powerful enough to get enough people in that niche, or it's too generic and nobody wants to buy it. So there's a marketability aspect to the book as well. And I tell authors, give it a try and really put some good effort into marketing this. But if it's not taking off, like if you're pushing this thing for like over a year and people just aren't biting, well, maybe it's time to reevaluate your book and then bring it back and maybe change it, maybe change the title, change the cover, do some serious rewriting, who knows, but don't keep on dumping money into a project that's never going to go anywhere.
Yeah. Honest, hard truths again. Wasn't it said that somebody was able to publish a book with no words on it on Amazon or something, that's how, and sell it or something? my disappointment with some of the things I learned through the process, like my disappointment was like the quality of some of the prints from Amazon came back rubbish. I didn't realize, like, you design the cover and everything and the artwork's great and I had it all to the specs and everything, and then the printing from Amazon was just way off, and like I was having to send them back. And obviously maybe Amazon's just, you know, maybe it's better to go through a smaller printing house. What are your thoughts?
Amazon has gotten better over the years, that's for sure, but even to this day with clients, they're saying, oh, these books, the pages were ripped out, the cover was all printed different. It happens. They print millions of books, probably millions of books a day. So it's going to happen. It's not a huge concern. Amazon's pretty good about taking back returns and like anything that's didn't print right and redoing it. And they usually get it right the second time. The problem with the smaller print houses, again, is the cost involved. If you do find like a small print on demand place, that might be okay. But for the most part, they want you to print, you know, 100 copies, 1,000 copies or whatever. And most authors just don't sell that many. Or even if they do, like what I did with my first book, after I printed 3,000 copies of a hardback, 740 pages,
wow,
I realized that the book was like filled with all these errors. And I had to do a second edition.
Oh, man.
And basically, I'm like, all right, what am I going to do with this 3,000? So like I gave them away, I recycled. And that's the real problem with printing and storing, as opposed to print on demand. You find a problem, no big deal. You send them a new file, and then all the books printed from that point on will be new. It's a wonderful technology. And yeah, granted, the quality at times is not up to par with what you might find in a professionally printed book, that like a mass produced Harry Potter or something. But it's the trade-off. And I think it's a trade-off that's well worth it, especially for 99.99% of self-published authors.
What do you think of the hybrid model? So for the listeners who may not know, the hybrid model is sort of halfway between traditional publishing and self-publishing. Do you offer that, or are you strictly self-publish?
Are you referring to like vanity presses, like that idea?
Yeah, I've just heard that it's more like a half in half solution. I've actually heard of concepts where you pay a fee up front to the publisher, and then once that's recouped, they pay you the profits. I'm not right. overly familiar, but that's what I've heard.
Everybody has a different strategy and could offer something different, like a different contractual agreement. But that does sound like what's considered a vanity press. A vanity press is you can use their publishing imprint, and you in exchange you pay them. So like you suggested, you may pay, okay, give us $3,000 and we'll print this book for you and we'll run it, and then we'll give you a smaller percentage, not like the self-publishing percentage, or not as small as like if you went through a traditional publisher where you get like 1%, you may get like 10% or 15% or 20%. So it's all a matter of like risk versus reward. That I don't know why people still use vanity presses today, to be honest, given that there are pure self-publishing options like ours. I mean, I'm not unique in what I do. With what we do is we say, we just charge people for like the services. You want us to format your book? Here's a price. You want us to create the book for you with the covers and the all the formatting and give you all the files? Then there's just a small price. You pay for that. You take those files, then you list them on Amazon or Ingram, or you could have us list them on Amazon and Ingram. And if we do the distribution, our share is just 15% of the net. So that means if the author makes $100, then we get 15 and they get 85. So that's that is, I guess you could call that a hybrid model in a way, as opposed to the self-published author doing everything themselves and trying to get through the learning curve. And let's face it, self-published authors, they don't know about formatting. They don't know about like how to create a cover. And when they think they do, it turns out to be a disaster. I mean, I had a graphic design company prior to this, and I gave up on doing the covers because we use this other company now that does like a much better job than I could ever do. So you have to realize that covers are huge. If your cover is not good and not like really attractive, then it is just going to like get lost in the sea of millions of other books out there.
It's classic. Actually, I've experienced this in film. It's like, you know, filmmaking is so hard and such an awesome feat when you get a film over the line. And then I've seen cases where it's just like there's a bad poster in the end, and it's like, wow, you've got like what it takes to get over a film over the line, and then you've got this image that's representing the whole thing, and it's the same with the book, and it just lets it down. It's like, man, but again, it seems to be about an acknowledgement of, well, hey, perhaps that's not my thing. Get someone who knows what they're doing to present the thing, you know, to have that first image.
Right.
It's classic. It's classic when you did go through a publisher that they were talking instant gratification. Like, books are supposed to be a bit of a slow cook, right? Like, you take your time. I can relate to your frustration there. So have you been satisfied with the AI side of things in terms of the books you've done through AI? Have you been really, you seem to speak of it in a very positive sense, which is cool to hear. Yeah.
Yes. Extremely satisfied. In fact, I started a company or a website, bud.ai, because I was doing the books myself, like just kind of like just using ChatGPT, and I was like slowly mastering the prompts to get it to do it the correct way. And then I built the whole thing in like an internal backend where everything was done behind the scenes. And then I said, this is amazing. So why not offer it to other people? Because there's no way that like it takes even like a, you know, 3 hours or so to do a full project. And I just don't have that kind of time to keep on hammering out those books. So like, why not make it available to other people? So that's what I did. But here's the thing, like when I first was working with AI, and I saw the quality, like what it actually writes, I was completely blown away. And I could say this as somebody who has literally evaluated thousands of books from self-published authors. I could say that the books that AI writes are better than 95% of all of those. Like the quality, the writing, the ideas, like everything. And we're talking nonfiction. I'm not involved in fiction right now because of some technical limitations with AI that I won't get into. But for the most part, with nonfiction books, and not autobiographical too, because AI has trouble with, like, it'll make stuff up about you if it doesn't have all that information, but about things it knows about, information it was trained on, with it, which is pretty much everything in the world, with the exception of individual stories of people who are not famous. So the quality of the book has just been amazing. And that's why I think, like, authors who write nonfiction books about common ideas need to start thinking about, like, doing something different, changing their strategy. Because if AI could do that better than you can, then you're going to be in trouble. And that's pretty much the same with any kind of technology. You know, if a robot could build a car better than you can, then you got to start looking for another job. I still think that there's a lot of room in the area for authors, for fiction books, at least for the time being, because that creativity that we mentioned earlier, that's something that tends to be uniquely human at this point.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
And maybe I'm this might be laughable 6 months from now when AI is more creative than us. But anyways, I'm talking about, like, pretty much where things stand right now. And also with fields of precise expertise. And what I mean by that is when I write books by AI, I'm like, yeah, this does a better job than I can. With the exception of areas of my specific domain. Like if I write about logical fallacies, I could do a better job because most likely AI was trained on all my writings on the topic. So, and then plus of other people who are not as knowledgeable in that area, or like with social psychology, where my PhD is, it doesn't quite have that high level of knowledge. So it'll do a fantastic job writing about, like, a great diet, or how to market a website, or like things that like a good college educated person might write. But when it comes to really, really high level, it's not quite there yet. So authors still have time for the time being that want to write books to just think about what you're really, really good at, where your level of expertise is, and focus on that as opposed to something generic that anybody could write. And again, that's for the time being. 6 months from now, I think that AI will be PhD level or above on the majority of topics, and things are going to change again then.
Yeah, the growth is exponential, right? It's dipping up. It's a really nice reframe what you've said, actually, because as a writer myself, I just, you know, I had the whole AI doom and gloom thing, and then I was like, well, no, I have I have a faith in my personal experience and my personal expertise, yeah. my personal story. But what you're saying is a really nice reframe, because it is like, well, be aware of the things that you can bring and offer. But yeah, maybe working sort of in harmony with AI, you can offer something completely different that you're not, that's not necessarily your strength. I guess I was looking at it as, oh, this is the be all and end all of writing. But again, it's like being very specific about what you can bring or what a different area. So it's cool to hear it framed like that.
Yeah.
You also have experience in comedy. I'm a huge fan. I'm a massive fan of the craft of comedy. I have a real respect for the craft. You know, I played in bands in my youth and just like public bombing in bands. I mean, you're often in a group, you can bomb together, but like standing on at an open mic and being willing to like be in that discomfort of bombing, I think like there's so much growth that comes.
Oh yeah.
like massive amounts of growth in short condensed amounts of time.
Right.
Public failure, public bombing, but just the craft of comedy and writing jokes. I think I'm quite an observational person. I think my style would be more of a, you know, anecdotal observational thing. Is that your style as well? What's been your joke writing process as well?
Yeah, I don't know if I know enough about myself to say that I have a style at this point. I'll give you a quick background. I grew up like watching Saturday Night Live at age 2.
Wow. Like,
so I think the first year was 1974. So I'd watch it with my older sister and brother. And I was like 2 years old. And I watched it ever since. 74, 75, maybe it started, but so 2 or 3. But I absolutely loved it. And that's kind of what got me started in comedy. And I like ever since sitcoms, stand-up comedians, I love them all. I love all the different kinds of humor. And I've always been like writing things down, like, oh, that's so funny. Finding humor in situations where most people don't, or most people aren't looking for it.
That's what I'm getting at. Person yeah, yeah.
Who you could be with like at a serious situation and I'll just start laughing and like, I'll have to cover my mouth. And my wife is always saying, what's it? I'm like, I'll tell you later. It's just like these crazy thoughts come to my mouth, like these situations. So anyway, I started writing some of those things down. And then I began a public speaking journey, because after I wrote my first book, I realized that if I couldn't speak about it and I couldn't communicate it effectively, then I'd be in a far worse position than if I could. So I joined an organization called Toastmasters International, and I was with that for over 10 years, like working on public speaking. And then I thought like, okay, I'm really good at public speaking now, so I could do stand-up comedy. And boy, was I wrong. I did the stand-up comedy for about a year, the circuit in Boston, which isn't like the hub of stand-up comedy, but it is a city where it is kind of popular. And sometimes I did okay, and sometimes I like totally bombed, and it was a learning process. And I think what I learned about myself there is I am not a stand-up comedian type of guy. I'm a writer. like I could write comedy, and that's where it shines the most. And that's what I'm most comfortable with. And I think that's what people enjoy the most from me. So learning that about myself again, and it took some time to actually know where that was. I also did improv, and that was a lot of fun. Like improv comedy, that is big in Boston. It took like an improv course when you get to go up there and try. And again, I enjoyed it. It was fun, but I am not an improv type of guy. That's just not me. So I started writing a sitcom, and the sitcom is called Squat Spot Fitness. And I wrote it as a screenplay first, and then just like the pilot episode. And then I really liked it. So I expanded that to the full season. So I wrote 10 episodes, And then I was trying to market it. It won an award at the Big Apple Film Festival, like the finalist award, which was good, but it didn't get any calls from Hollywood. So I had to take it the next step myself. So I got voice actors that I've been working with over the years in audiobooks to act out the characters, act out the parts. I did all the sound effects, and then I ultimately did all the animation myself, because actually filming this as a live action would be just like way too expensive. So I did it as an animated comedy, and I have like 10 minutes left to do for the final episode, but everything else is online on YouTube right now. And you could find it at squatspotfitness.com. It's a sitcom about a gym, a suburban gym, like the craziness that goes on there. And I've been going to gym since age 10, and like over the years, there's just like tons of, it's a comedy gold mine of what goes on there and what happens. So I said, okay, I got to kind of document my experiences in this sitcom. And it's also integrated with a lot of social issues, because I think social issues can be enormously entertaining and funny if you look at them that way and you don't look at them, you know, seriously, like most people look at them. So the whole thing is all about social issues and politics, and it's a lot of fun, I think.
That's awesome, man. I love that the world is in the gym. There's so much stuff that goes down just in the gym. I really love these different worlds. Like, you know, I went into a printing shop here the other week, like an old school print shop. Hmm. And like the guy grabbed my zip drive, and he started looking through my files and whatever it was I wanted to print. And I was looking around, and some customers were having like some trouble with it. And I was like, this is a world. I was like, this print shop is a world, you know, and I don't really know this world, but this is like a world, you know. What if somebody gives him an image of something controversial and he just has to like ignore it and print it anyway, yeah, right. You know, all that type of stuff. So, but how did you do the animation?
It's a funny story, actually. I went through three different animators or animation companies, and all of them like underbidded essentially in order to get my business, and ended up either quitting or I had to fire them because they were doing like 1 minute of animation a month. I'm like, you know what, this is kind of like a timely sitcom. I can't wait that long. So I eventually came across a guy on Fiverr who was using this publicly available software, and he did the first episode for me and basically taught me how to use the software, and I did everything else myself.
That's awesome.
Using the software.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. I can really relate to that. Like, I've had ideas, and then it's like, well, what's the best way to execute this? And like, if you'd set the gym thing in the real world, it's like taking on a huge, huge budget. So it's no small feat that you've got all the way through that. And it is awesome times that you can put that out there and have it received.
Right.
And it's very cool that you've just taken a swing at so many things. Like you've said, with the, you know, it's not easy to get up on a stage and do stand up, but then on top of that, to acknowledge that, okay, I acknowledge that I'm more of a writer than an actual get on stage kind of thing. Again, it's like these hard truths, and acknowledging what your strengths are and pivoting in those ways. But I'm definitely going to check out the series. It's a tradition on the show to have guests offer some sort of challenge for the listeners, given their experience, personal journeys, whatever it may be, or even just given our discussion. I mean, kind of riffing on it a little bit, I do seem to be coming back to this kind of hard truth thing, like taking an honest look at strengths. But does anything spring to mind?
Well, I guess it depends on which domain are we talking about. Are we talking about the publishing industry? Are we talking
about true
improvement?
True, true.
Where do you want to go with this?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I would say, I would say the publishing industry.
The publishing industry. So the challenge, I'd present two different challenges there. One is to potential authors. Authors who have this idea for a book, but it's just an overwhelming process. And it's one of those ideas that like, oh, I want to write a book, but there's so much involved. I don't have time. My challenge to them is write your first book using AI. Just go to our site, bookbud.ai. Start with an idea. That's all you need. A few hours later, you're going to have your book, publish it. You're a published author. Congratulations. Once you get over that hump and you kind of are walked through the entire process, then you could start doing it like more on your own. You could do like your own book. But it's really getting over that hump. The saying that like, oh, there's no way I could possibly do this. But yes, you can. And you could do it in a few hours. So that's my challenge to people who have this idea for a book, but never quite followed through with it. Now, my challenge to self-published authors who are out there right now with a book that isn't really doing too well. It's just kind of languishing out there in cyberspace, and they may get a couple sales a year or whatever, but they definitely want more, is to seriously reevaluate your book. Say, okay, why isn't this selling? And one of the big mistakes that authors make is they say, hey, I'm going to send my book to my friends and family. Let's see what they say. Of course, they're going to love it. They're your friends and they're your family. They're not going to say anything different. And it's not just that they're lying to you. It's like a cognitive bias, essentially. It's called the halo effect. They see you as this great person. Therefore, if you write a book, it must be great as well. And it's going to really taint their experience with the book. Do not send it to your friends and family. I mean, you could, but don't get any feedback from them. Don't take it seriously. Send it to complete strangers. That's the way to do it. There's plenty of sites that allow you to do that. And see what people are saying about it. And also, it's the whole idea of like, oh, I get people that tell me this book is great, like strangers. But it's kind of like that, that if you want to call it like a review bias, in that people will only review it if it's completely fantastic or completely horrible. And since people tend to be nice on the nicer side, fortunately, you're going to get like more people saying, yeah, this is great. But there's going to be tons of people that are just like, yeah, this wasn't that good. It's not even worth it for them to leave a review. So typical review sites don't quite do it either. It's more of like a back and forth process that you have to have with people to get like an honest opinion of your book. But really, for the most part, you don't even need to go that far. If you have a book that's just sitting out there and it's not doing anything, well, something's wrong with it. Or it's not to the caliber that it needs to be for it to be flying off the virtual shelves. So do something about it. That's my challenge.
Yeah, awesome. No, those are two good ones. Yeah, I've really gotten to a point where it's like, it was in bands, art, all of it. It's like you do get to a point where you sort of, you don't want to make art for your friends anymore. As much as you appreciate the support, you know, they support you because they're your friend. It's a bonus if they actually like the stuff. But yeah, that's a big one. Where can people find you? And if you could just run through the main sites again.
Sure. Well, the three things that we talked about, one is my business sites where you could find BookBud, Book Marketing Pro, and Author Voices, my narration AI narration site at archieboy.com, archieboy.com. That's my main site where all my business sites are connected to. If you're interested in my books about critical thinking, philosophy, or more like psychology and some other issues, you can go to bobennett.com, bobennett.com. And then finally, we talked about my sitcom. You can find that on YouTube. Go to squatspotfitness.com and that'll automatically jump because if you type in squat in YouTube, you're going to get hundreds of thousands of videos of people teaching you how to do squats, and mine will be buried in there. So it's squatspotfitness.com.
Yeah, cool. All these domains you have are very cool because I do get a bit frustrated with, you know, you have to have a niche and you have to stay in. If you don't have, I mean, you can focus on one niche in an area, right? But why not have a broad range of domains like yourself? So it's very cool that you're very clear about that. They're all very different, but they're all in the right kind of places.
Yeah, because I mean, some things don't work, or things could change. Like, not a lot is going to be changing with, well, I shouldn't say that, but my point is that anything could happen with AI, like any day, and like OpenAI could go bankrupt or could shut down, or the government could shut it down, or Amazon could take over and do all this. So you always have to have like many different things going on and prepare for that. You don't basically want to put all your eggs in one basket.
Mm. And the internet was kind of the Wild West already. Now AI is like the West within the Wild West. So
yeah, it's crazy.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. It was great talking to you.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.